hopefully we have a cadre of people that are of like mind, and so we can get an agenda across for the people of Alaska.
Republican Mike Dunleavy will be Alaska's next governor. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 7th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, Republicans prepare to retake the state house.
In the end, I think we'll get something done, and I think we're going to do it in a timely manner, too.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Starting October 1st, all of Alaska will be protected from the harmful effects of secondhand smoke because all public places across the state will be smoke-free. Everyone can now breathe easier as they work and play. Smoke-free workplaces and public spaces protects the health of all Alaskans. It also protects our youth from ever starting smoking. So if you do smoke or vape, please take it outside. For more information about the new smoke-free workplace law, visit smokefree.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Department of Health and Social Services.
Mike Dunleavy won the election for governor by a decisive margin in a night that was the best for Alaska Republicans in 8 years. Democratic candidate Mark Begich called Dunleavy today to congratulate him. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what propelled Dunleavy to victory and how he expects to move forward.
Dunleavy is a former state senator from Wasilla who pledged to cut government and restore full permanent fund dividends. He says the message resonated with Alaskans.
We don't have to default to taxes or permanent fund until we get our fiscal house in order. We need to create jobs. You know, I'm not going to celebrate, for example, the expansion of welfare programs. I'm going to celebrate the expansion of job creation in the state of Alaska.
Democrat Mark Begich wasn't able to close the lead Dunleavy built when it was a three-way race. As the early returns came in, Begich reflected on the campaign.
I think this has been a total unusual campaign, hard to understand what was going to happen every day, a lot of changes as we move through it. But really, I think we've done a great campaign because we brought a lot of people together that had not been together for a long time.
Dunleavy led 53% to 44%, with 98% of precincts reporting. Independent Governor Bill Walker and Libertarian Billy Toyen each won 2%. Dunleavy says he will immediately begin work building his administration. He has proposed repealing the criminal justice overhaul that became law 2 years ago. He also wants a strict limit on state spending that will be lower than the limit in the state constitution. Dunleavy also expressed optimism about Republican gains in the legislature.
Hopefully we have a cadre of people that are of like mind, and so we can get an agenda across for the people of Alaska.
Dunleavy began his campaign last year, building support among conservatives, starting with his base in Matanuska-Susitna Borough. An independent group partly funded by his brother Francis Dunleavy discouraged some Republicans from entering the race. Walker suspended his campaign 18 days before the election, 4 days after his running mate, Byron Mallott, resigned after making what Walker has described as inappropriate comments to a woman. Walker's popularity fell after he vetoed half of the PFDs in 2016 to shore up state finances. Begich launched his campaign at the June deadline and never built a lasting lead over Walker as the primary rival to Dunleavy until Walker ended his campaign. Dunleavy is expected to begin making announcements about who he'll appoint to his administration in the coming days. Dunleavy's running mate, Anchorage State Senator Kevin Meyer, will be the lieutenant governor. Dunleavy will be sworn in on December 1st. In Anchorage, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Alaskans reelected Congressman Don Young to a 24th term last night. He won 54% of the vote, making Elise Galvin the 21st Democratic nominee to take a run at him and lose. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Don Young! Don Young!
Young made a triumphant entrance to Election Central in Anchorage just before 11 p.m.
And it's God's will and the people of Alaska that support me. If they do, we win. If they don't, I don't win.
Young is the most senior member of Congress, but he will now be a Republican in a House controlled by Democrats. Young says the change could mean progress. He says the large Republican majority stifled moderate voices and made it difficult to reach agreements.
And this time there's not going to be a large majority, so I think you'll see a working relationship. I think you'll see Trump will be able to work with people and get things done. The country has some challenges that can't be left alone. We have to take and accept that challenge and get the job done. So I'm excited about it.
Young will be 87 when he finishes his next term. Will he run again after that? He says he will, as long as he's able to do the job and feel good physically. Elise Galvin's campaign ended where it kicked off in January, in the party room of a brew pub in downtown Anchorage.
I'm pretty distraught.
Supporter Mary Schallert said Galvin ran a smart, energetic campaign.
She got money from individuals, not PACs. She did an amazing job, and technically she should have won, I think, because of, you know, she did everything she could have done.
Galvin took the stage around 11:30 p.m. and said she'd called Young to congratulate him.
Alaskans have voted. I respect Dawn Young's continued service for our great state.
Galvin said her campaign had more than 1,000 volunteers who knocked on 10,000 doors and made 40,000 calls. She said they worked to benefit everyday Alaskans, like those who have to ration their prescription drugs and sexual assault victims who've been ignored. Galvin called it a movement.
No matter who our governor, no matter who is our representative or who's in the Senate, this work that we've been putting together for the last 10 months will continue. Right?
As for what direction that work would take, she didn't say. Reporting from Anchorage and with help from Casey Grove, I'm Liz Ruskin.
As we've reported, Alaska Republicans had a good night Tuesday. The GOP kept its majority in the state Senate, it flipped at least two seats in the state House, and it took back the governor's office. House members and senators are holding meetings this week to organize new caucuses leading each chamber. But as Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, it won't necessarily be smooth sailing even if the Alaska Capitol ends up under one-party control.
Alaska House Republicans were pretty excited Wednesday. They were announcing the end of their 2 years of being relegated to the minority by a largely Democratic coalition. Assuming Bart Lebon of Fairbanks holds on to a 79-vote lead after absentee ballots are counted, the GOP says it will have a 21-19 majority in the chamber.
Well, thanks so much for being here today. We really
That's Representative Dave Tallarico of Healy, who Republicans say will be the new speaker when the House reconvenes in January. The buoyant mood at the news conference was punctured, though, once reporters started asking questions about the new Republican majority structure and goals. Here's Tallarico when he was asked to explain the group's organizing principles.
Well, we're actually working on those right now. We have our work cut out for us for sure to put that together.
Tallarico ultimately arrived at controlling spending and having a sustainable budget as two of his caucus's priorities. But here's the thing. While GOP members share the same party label, they don't always have the same vision for state government. Take the permanent fund, for example. Mike Dunleavy, the Republican just elected governor, wants the state to write $6,000 checks to each Alaskan to cover next year's dividend and the amount dividends were reduced in the past 3 years. But Anchorage Representative Lance Pruitt, who Republicans say will co-chair the House Finance Committee next year, isn't so sure about that. He spoke at an election night party downtown.
I think that one's a little bit complex probably pretty challenging. But you know what? He gets to propose that, and we get to analyze whether or not that we see that's something that can happen.
There are also ideological divides within Pruitt's own group of House Republicans. One of the most conservative GOP members, Wasilla Representative David Eastman, has frustrated some of his Republican colleagues by staking out uncompromising far-right positions on the budget and social issues. So much so that another Republican House member, Gary Knopp of Kenai, says he's not sure whether Eastman will fit into a GOP caucus or whether Eastman wants to be part of one.
You know, I like Rep. Eastman. He's a very, very smart man. He just needs to tone it down and work with the others and quit attacking them. It's kind of unfortunate because he's probably one of the brightest individuals. When I watch the work that he does and I read what he does, I got a lot of admiration for that, but I have any admiration for his approach.
At Wednesday's news conference, Republicans said Eastman will be part of their new House majority. but he wasn't in the room and he didn't respond to a call or text message to confirm his membership. Without Eastman, the new Republican majority would have just 20 seats in the 40-member House, which isn't a majority at all. Internal divisions within a majority caucus in the legislature are nothing new. It's normal when you're trying to get more than 20 people to agree on subjects as complicated and polarizing as permanent fund dividends and fixing a budget deficit. What's different this year is that the Capitol could be under one-party leadership, setting up higher expectations for Republicans to produce results. But Pruitt, the Anchorage Republican representative, says debate and dissent are a welcome part of the legislative process.
I think that's what I love about being a part of the caucus that I'm a part of, is we will come to an agreement in the end that will work through and look through all the concerns that they come from whatever direction and whatever, you know, walk of life people are bringing to the table. So we'll see. But in the end, I think we'll get something done, and I think we're going to do it in a timely manner, too.
In a prepared statement Wednesday, the current Democratic House Speaker, Bryce Edgman, says it's premature for the GOP to focus on its new organization, given that absentee ballots haven't been counted in at least one close race. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage will receive up to $1 million to fund a climate change art project.
Culture brings capital faster than capital brings culture. And if you want to take a city that's down on its luck, start by getting some artists there.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
One out of three U.S. adults has pre-diabetes, but 90% of them don't even know they have it. The good news is you can prevent type 2 diabetes by acting early. Learn your risk for pre-diabetes by taking a short quiz at diabetes.alaska.gov. If you're at risk, you can enroll in a free online program called Turnaround Health. The program will help you eat better, be active, and lose weight. Learn more at diabetes.alaska.gov. This message sponsored in part by the Department of Health and Social Services.
In Interior, Alaska, State Senate President Pete Kelly held a razor-thin lead over Democratic challenger Scott Kawasaki late Tuesday in what's proven to be the hottest legislative race this year. But Kawasaki says it's not over yet.
There's still hundreds of ballots that are out there that have yet to be counted. Those are ballots that are question ballots. That's folks that may have shown up to the wrong precinct. There's also ballots that are absentee ballots that have come in since last week. And there are absentee ballots that might be postmarked with today's date that just haven't gone through the mail process.
Unofficial vote totals posted just before midnight by the State Division of Elections showed Kelly leading Kawasaki by 11 votes, with all precincts in Senate District A reporting. The incumbent and challenger took turns leading the race throughout the evening, but the gap between the two never exceeded a couple of percentage points. Kawasaki says it shows the district's 13 precincts are nearly equally divided between Republicans and Democrats.
We worked really hard in the district. We talked to the people, and I think we made inroads with people on both sides of the aisle to get us as close as we have.
Kelly reportedly was sick Tuesday night and unavailable for comment. Kawasaki says regardless of the outcome, he hopes the candidate who eventually is declared the winner will work to heal divisions created by the often contentious campaign.
When it comes down to it, we all have to come together as Alaskans. We all have to come together for whoever gets elected in the end. To try and make this a better place, to try and make this a better community. And I hope to be the person that does that, but we shall see in the next week or so.
Kawasaki raised more than $207,000 for his campaign, about $20,000 more than Kelly's contributions, making it by far the most expensive legislative race of 2018. If declared the winner, Kelly will begin his sixth term as a senator when the next legislature convenes in January. Well, the balance of power is shifting across Alaska, but early and admittedly incomplete returns show that Southeast voters continue to support Democrats and their allies in the House and Senate. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
Juneau's all-Democrat delegation was in play, with none of the incumbents seeking re-election. Outgoing Senator Dennis Egan did not endorse anyone in the race, but his former aide Jesse Keel, a Juneau assemblyman, trounced his independent challenger Don Etheridge, a labor lobbyist, by more than 20 points. Senate District Q includes Juneau, Skagway, and Haines. Keel said Tuesday evening he hoped the Senate would get to work tackling real-world issues.
And not worry about, you know, team sports and which party is ahead or behind or who's positioned for what, you know, election. Leave it behind. deal with that in the election season, do the work in the legislature. That's the goal.
Democrat Sarah Hannan defeated independent Chris Diamond, a union organizer, by about 12 points. The race was for District 33, which includes downtown Juneau and Haines and Skagway, and was represented by Sam Keto III. Diamond's campaign enjoyed a lot of support from organized labor and outraised Hannon's campaign by more than $17,000. Hannan pointed out that much of her opponent's fundraising came from statewide PACs tied to developers' interests.
A lot of my money was raised in the district from people who weren't just donating, they were voters.
There was one Republican running for State House in Juneau, Jerry Nan Curvis, a retired police officer and until recently the city's deputy mayor. He was vying for District 34, vacated by Democrat Justin Parrish. But the Democrat in the race, longtime school board member Andy Story, beat him by about 5 points. As the results were coming into her favor, Story took a shot at Governor-elect Mike Dunleavy's pledge to expand resource development to solve the state's fiscal crisis.
We need to have a financial path forward, and it needs to be more than look at the price of oil. We need to make some strategic investments to get Alaska growing again, and I think that message resounded with a lot of people that I talked to.
In the southern end of the panhandle, Ketchikan's Dan Ortez fended off a challenge from Republican Trevor Shaw for House District 36. Ortez is an independent who's caucused with Democrats in the House. This will be his second term in office. Preliminary results also favor Sitka's Jonathan Christ Tompkins for House District 35, but technical problems at several precincts have delayed results, making that race too close to call. With additional reporting from Kavitha George and Adeline Baxter, I'm Jacob Resnick in Juneau.
By a significant margin, Alaska voters defeated Ballot Measure 1, commonly known as the Stand for Salmon Initiative. The controversial measure was aimed at increasing protections for Alaska's most iconic fish. It would have significantly toughened the environmental permitting process for developments in salmon habitat. The outcome was immediately celebrated by a key figure pressing ahead on another controversial issue, the CEO of the Pebble Limited Partnership. Elizabeth Harball of Alaska's Energy Desk has more.
Pebble Limited Partnership CEO Tom Collier says even though his mine proposal wasn't always at the forefront of the debate, the Salmon Habitat Initiative was in some ways all about Pebble.
It was clear that this initiative was aimed at trying to stop Pebble and stop any other major significant resources development project in Alaska.
Pebble's push to develop a copper mine in the Bristol Bay region faces fierce resistance from groups who say it endangers the salmon fishery there. Many of those same groups supported Ballot Measure 1. But Pebble kept a relatively low profile leading up to this election. Although it contributed money to the campaign against the initiative, it didn't play a huge role in the opposition's messaging. Collier says with the initiative's defeat, he's more confident about Pebble's prospects.
You know, we think that responsible development can now go ahead in the state with the rigorous permitting requirements that the state already has in place. And we're eager to be part of that as we move forward.
During the campaign, Ballot Measure 1 supporters were reined in from outright saying it would block Pebble. And there's a legal reason for that. The state of Alaska challenged the initiative in court, saying it went against the state constitution for a ballot measure to prioritize land for one use, here salmon, over other uses, like a mine. The Supreme Court thought some parts of the initiative did just that, and in August removed those parts, allowing the rest to go on the ballot. United Tribes of Bristol Bay Executive Director and anti-Pebble advocate Alana Hurley says she does not think the initiative would have halted the mine, but she believes it still would have helped opponents' cause by putting in place stricter standards. She points out that the Bristol Bay region did vote largely in favor of the ballot initiative.
While those ideals didn't prevail at the statewide level, it's still a really clear indication about our region's priorities and what we value.
The Pebble Limited Partnership wasn't the only mining company happy with the election's outcome. Donlin Gold spokesman Kurt Parkin, whose company is trying to develop a large gold mine in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, said it would have delayed the project's quest to get its major state permits by early next year. Parkin says at a mining conference in Anchorage the next day, many were breathing a sigh of relief.
I think people were surprised at how big the margin was to win by over 63-64%, was huge. And so people were pretty pleased with that.
Parkin says Ballot Measure 1 opponents could be willing to come to the table and negotiate updates to the state's salmon habitat protections. But he said it would have to be through the legislative process rather than by ballot initiative. The initiative sponsors have also said they're going to continue pursuing ways to update the state's laws protecting salmon habitat. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile tools to help Alaskans succeed. Promises kept, trust earned since 1922. FNBAAlaska.com.
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska wants to remind residents that open enrollment for individual and family health plans is now through December 15th. Many Alaskans qualify for a tax credit on their premiums, and studies from CMS indicate 90% of Alaskans qualified for a tax credit in 2017 to help lower the cost of coverage. Learn more and estimate your tax credit at primera.com. This message sponsored by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska.
An Anchorage Superior Court judge who oversaw a controversial plea deal this year appears to have been voted out. Judge Michael Corey accepted a plea agreement in a case many considered a sexual assault, but prosecutors said they would have had trouble proving specific parts of the original allegations, so they offered the defendant a plea deal, and when Judge Corey accepted it, that allowed the man to walk free after time served on an ankle monitor. That angered thousands of Alaskans, and a grassroots campaign organized against the judge. The campaign appears to have been successful, as those voting not to retain Corey outnumber his supporters by more than 6%. That was with nearly all precincts reporting. Former New York City mayor, political donor, and philanthropist Michael Bloomberg is in Anchorage today. He announced Anchorage is receiving up to $1 million for a public art project focused on climate change. Bloomberg spoke to local luminaries in a gallery of the Anchorage Museum surrounded by contemporary Alaska art and Sidney Lawrence's iconic Mount McKinley painting. The philanthropy program is meant to invest in cities that use public art to spur economic development and promote civic dialogue. This year, Bloomberg says, there were around 200 applicants for the grant.
And today, I'm glad to announce our first winner. And you, as may have guessed, Anchorage has won the Public Art Challenge. Congratulations.
The money will go towards setting up what the city calls the Solutions for Energy and Equity Through Design Lab, or SEED Lab. It'll be housed in an empty building downtown near the museum, which will act as landlord in partnering with the city. The idea is to create something between a think tank and public art space to design projects focused on climate change solutions. Bloomberg says public art can help facilitate urban improvement.
I've always believed from a business point of view that art is a very smart investment for cities. We have a saying at Bloomberg Philanthropies that culture brings capital faster than capital brings culture. And if you want to take a city that's down on its luck, start by getting some artists there.
Bloomberg is widely thought to be exploring a potential presidential run in 2020. He used part of his remarks to address broad national issues, including Democratic gains in Congress that he has donated money to, as well as campaigns to change gun laws. The outcome of a House district race in Southeast is in question following technical issues with one key element of the voting machines. KCAW's Emily Kwong reports from Sitka.
House District 35 is a picture straight from a Southeast postcard. It includes historic Sitka, picturesque Petersburg, and parts of wooded Prince of Wales Island. But the experience of some of these rural precincts on election day was a bit of a nightmare.
So what happened was, at the time that the polls closed, our machine would not take the Ender card.
Cassie Mackey is the city clerk in Craig on Prince of Wales Island. The Ender card she's describing is basically a piece of cardstock. Poll workers are supposed to feed the card into optical scanners to tally votes.
And that basically just tells the machine, we're done voting, you can tally the results. And that card that the state had provided us wouldn't run through the machine. So we tried multiple times for about an hour.
But an error message kept popping up. Craig poll workers weren't alone in their frustration. Both of Sitka's precincts and the communities of Kluwak, Cake, and Thorne Bay also ran into problems. As of Wednesday afternoon, 6 of 14 precincts in District 35 haven't been tallied by state election officials. Similar breakdowns occurred in Prince of Wales communities in District 36 and in Haines, which is in District 33. But unlike District 35, those errors weren't enough to leave the outcome of the entire race in doubt. So what happened? Lori Wilson is the state's Region 1 elections supervisor, and she has a theory. She's examined the Ender cards closely and found that the marks printed on some of the older card stock are crooked. As a result, the cards couldn't be read by the optical scanners.
They weren't able to be read through the AccuVote unit to end the election.
There is a backup protocol. The machine's memory cards have been couriered to Juneau as air cargo, but they won't be delivered until about 24 hours after the polls closed. Only then will there be clarity in the race between Democratic incumbent Jonathan Kreiss Tompkins and Republican challenger Dr. Richard Wien. The incumbent is up by about 300 votes, but he's not popping any corks yet.
Obviously, there's still a number of precincts out, and both candidates are from Sitka, so I think Sitka is a big question mark, too. But all equal, the numbers are really promising, and we're excited and grateful for that.
Wien did not return calls on Wednesday afternoon. So election officials are blaming Southeast poll headaches on faulty cards rather than faulty machines. Still, Alaska is working to replace its machines, some of which are 20 years old. And the good news is there's likely federal grant money for new equipment in time for the 2020 general election. Reporting in Sitka, with help from Enrique Perez de la Rosa, I'm Emily Kwong.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman, Liz Ruskin, Nat Herz, Zachariah Hughes, and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Jacob Resnick in Juneau, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and Emily Kwong in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our producer. And I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Raven Alaska. Raven serves Alaskans in over 115 communities across the state, from Valdez, Utqiagvik, and more. Information at flyraven.com.
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska wants to remind residents that open enrollment for individual and family health plans is now through December 15th. Many Alaskans qualify for a tax credit on their premiums, and studies from CMS indicate 90% of Alaskans qualified for a tax credit in 2017 to help lower the cost of coverage. Learn more and estimate your tax credit at Primera.com. This message sponsored by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. One out of three U.S. adults has pre-diabetes, but 90% of them don't even know they have it. The good news is you can prevent type 2 diabetes by acting early. Learn your risk for prediabetes by taking a short quiz at diabetes.alaska.gov. If you're at risk, you can enroll in a free online program called Turnaround Health. The program will help you eat better, be active, and lose weight. Learn more at diabetes.alaska.gov. This message sponsored in part by the Department of Health and Social Services.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.